to see each of you this evening. A number of blank spots, but we have a few folks back after a while away. Got a text from Keith Hammonds a little while ago, and Linda apparently has the flu. So started in that family. So hopefully it won't spread anywhere else. Marilyn and I were just talking the other day about how we very rarely get sick. Of course, we don't deal with munchkins with runny nose as much anymore either, so that might be the reason for that. Don't know what I can do about it. Turn it up a little bit, I guess. Okay, Genesis chapter 4. Sure hope you can hear that. Or Genesis chapter 2, rather. Got me all messed up here. We got right to the end of Genesis chapter 2 last week, and there was a couple of things I wanted to go back and talk about just a bit. One of the things I did mention, but I forgot to tell the whole story. I asked Marilyn if I'd mentioned about the Korean Sabbath, and I know we talked a little bit about Sabbath and how the word is found in a number of different historical excavations and things like that. But there's one story that I was going to relate, and I guess got to thinking about something else. But anyway, most of you are aware of the story of Marco Polo, and he was an explorer, an Italian, and he was able to get into the Chinese Empire, which at the time, and supposedly this was in the 1000s or so, 1100 something in that vicinity. And spent some time in the company of the Chinese emperor, and at that point in time, China was basically closed to everybody, and they really didn't want to allow him in, but somehow or other he finagled his way in and was able to live there for some years, and then came out and told about the Great Wall and all of the wonders of China that had been hidden from the world. Well, obviously it was not uncommon, at least in that part of the world, for each of these empires to be more or less isolated and were very isolationist, people today would call it, and didn't want any association with outside foreigners. And the country of Korea was the same way. At that time, it incorporated much more than it is today. But anyway, again, we're talking about a little bit later than Marco Polo, somewhere in the 12 to 1300s range. But there were a group of Swedish explorers that were shipwrecked. They were traveling around that part of the world, and a storm wrecked them on the shore somewhere of Korea, and were taken prisoner, actually, and spent a number of years incarcerated or in prison, and finally gained the trust of the people, and they let them out, but they wouldn't let them leave. And so it was some 40 or so years later that a couple of them actually escaped. And all this period of time, one of them had kept a diary and had talked with people and that kind of thing, and recorded many of the conversations. And one of the things he wrote down in his diary was some of their religious practices and one of their religious practices was that they, their idea of religion and ours are very, very different. But one of the things that they did was worshiped at their temple on the Sabbath day, and had been doing that for many years, and called it in their language Sabbath, or day of rest. And this was just sort of hidden. And I think it was in the 1990s that a graduate student in anthropology found that guy's diary. And so it was some 300 or 400 years after the events that it was actually published, and we became aware of it. But that's just one of the things I mentioned very early on, that many of the scientific discoveries today simply reinforce what the scriptures have already told us. Now, the scripture is not a science book, and so it doesn't have the kind of detail that somebody might want. But it is always amazing to me that science proves the scriptures, and the scriptures don't contradict science. And so anyway, I just wanted to share that a little bit with you, and that always makes me feel good when something secular like that comes back and reinforces the scriptures, and it's not, you know, it's not biased or anything, it's just a statement of fact, and the facts prove the scriptures. So anyway, just a little sharing there. Okay, at the end of chapter 2, God has made Eve and has established Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Now, we mentioned last week, we don't know exactly where that was. If you use the descriptions that are given in the scriptures, these two big red lines up here, that represents the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. This area down here represents what the scriptures refer to as Cush. This area refers to what the scriptures called Havilah. So those are the four places or four geological features that are mentioned in the description of Eden. So either Eden was a huge garden covering pretty much half a continent, or those names are not necessarily what they are today. And I think the point I made was that it's probably the same reason you might find rivers in this country named by the same name in different areas. And that is probably due to people migrating across the continent, and they may have lived in one particular area, and there was a river in that area called, we'll say, Yellow River. Well, they may come to another, move on toward the frontier, and in an area where there aren't isn't much civilization, and come across another area that may be 1,000 miles from their original home, and this area looks a lot like the homeland, and so they say, well, let's call this the Yellow River. And so that same kind of situation may have occurred there. So we don't really need to give a lot of emphasis to the location of the Garden of Eden. It's sort of like the location of Noah's Ark. We know it occurred, we know it was there, but it really doesn't add anything more to our salvation to know exactly the geo-coordinates of either one of the places. So Adam and Eve were placed in that particular area, wherever that was. And God caused a sleep to come on Adam, and so I don't know if doctors were just sort of backward, but this was actually surgery. God did surgery on Adam, and he put him to sleep. Well, I, I don't know if doctors had toyed with that idea and they just didn't have the wherewithal to put somebody to sleep or not, but that really didn't become a common practice until about the mid-1800s to put someone to sleep for surgery. Adam was made to sleep and one of his ribs were taken. You may have even heard the old wives' tale that men have one less rib than women do because God took one of Adam's ribs. Well, that's, you know, that's the same kind of thing, that blood in our veins is blue and in our arteries is red. Well, that's not true either, whether you thought that or not. Blood is blood, and it may be a little bit different shade of red depending on how much oxygen is in it. But nowhere in our body, I don't care how important you think you are, nobody has blue blood. So it's all just red, and it's done that way in pictures and things just make it easier to tell an artery and a vein apart. It's actually a lot easier in a body of some animal to tell an artery from a vein than it is in a picture, because they don't look the same. But that has nothing to do with this. I put this on the board, on the screen, to show you what is referred to as the human karyotype, which is just the scientific word for the genes that make up us. On the left is the male karyotype, and on the right is the female. And there are 23 pairs of chromosomes. And all of us have 23 pairs. That's what makes us human. And when we reproduce, mama supplies half of them, daddy supplies half of them. And so when they come together again, then we have the right number. And that occurs over and over and over and over. So that we don't change. This is the reason why scientists that push evolution have to have the billions or millions of years in order for this to take place, because we know the basic mutation rate. Every cell division, there's so many possibility of mutations, and there's so many cell divisions during a lifetime and all that kind of stuff. But it's a mathematical problem as opposed to a biological problem. But suffice it to say that mutations that don't kill are very rare, extremely rare. Most mutations are lethal, and that's why if they occur, the cell that had the mutation dies and nobody ever knows it. So in order to have evolved from some little one-celled organism into what we are today, just think of how many changes would have had to take place, how many generations it would have taken to do that. And so that's the reason why they have to have, whether the evidence indicates it or not, they're going to make it indicate that the Earth is millions of years old instead of thousands of years old. So the only difference in us, back to our picture there, is that last little pair on the bottom right. Men have one X and one Y chromosome. It's just called Y because it's just different. The X chromosome actually looks like an X. In fact, all of those look something on the order of an X. But females have two X's, and a male has an X and a Y. And that's the only part that's different. Every one of us, all of our other chromosomes are the same. By the same, I mean they have the same coding on them that determines whatever. Like on chromosome number 1, in position number 486, is the gene for handedness. And every one of us have it in that same spot. It just depends on which one of them we have. There's two possibilities. eye color and that kind of thing. All of that's being worked on. That's called the Human Genome Project. But anyway, the point is that our genetic makeup for men and women are the same. God couldn't have taken another animal and have used that animal as Adam's helpmeet. He could have had an animal helper, but the meat part, and that's not M-E-A-T, that's M-E-E-T, which is an old word that simply means helpful, helper. So Adam had needed someone as a helper, needed something as a helper. And you know, you women, I'm sure, would agree that men need all the help we can get. And that may be physical help, it may mean emotional help, it may be social help. But we're a very complex organism, and we need all of those things. Well, many of us have had, you may still have pets that you're very close to, but those pets don't supply the same kind of physical and emotional needs that a spouse would. That's not to say that somebody can't lead a perfectly normal life without a spouse, but the only proper spouse would be another human being, and another human being of the opposite sex. And so this, you know, this is all part of that divine plan, and it was all planned. It's not just by chance. And so God took a part of Adam, and even if you go back to the scientific part, the genes and everything that he had in his rib made up Eve. So she was made out of him. And in verse 23 of chapter 2, the man said, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she has been taken out of man." And we hear variations of that at a lot of weddings, that the rib is under the man's arm and therefore is near his heart and under his protection, not from his head to be walked over or feet to be tread upon and that kind of stuff. We've all heard that. Heard that little poem or whatever you call it, prose, I guess. But anyway, he says in verse 24, "For this reason," and that is because she was taken of man and is of man, "for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be..." joined. Now the term married simply means joined. That's just the definition of the word. And so he shall be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And that one flesh relationship, that's the only acceptable place for that, is in marriage. And the marriage is between a man and a woman, because in verse 25 he says, "And the man..." "And the man and woman were both naked and were not ashamed." So again, that's that one flesh thing. What I was thinking of a minute ago, and that's actually in chapter 3, but he said, "Go forth and be fruitful and multiply." Well, the only way that can happen, of course, is with a man and a woman. Two men cannot multiply, two women cannot multiply. That's just not the way it was designed. And even if it was designed by chance, it still has to be a man and a woman as the result of that. All right, anybody have any question or comment about chapter 1 or 2? So we're basically through with creation, and we'll now move on to the experiences that the creation experience. So anybody have any comment or question so far? Okay, in chapter 3, we have had two good Sunday lessons. The last two Sundays have been basically on Genesis chapter 3. And so we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about sin and sin entering the world and man having free will and and all of that. That's because I think that's been covered fairly well. But sin entered the world through deceit. The first sin, I guess you'd say, was deception. And then the next sin would be disobedience. And again, that goes back to our Sunday lessons, that if we go back into heaven, there obviously was some kind of sin that occurred there that got Satan kicked out. But exactly what, we don't know, some kind of rebellion. But other than that, we know very little about it. But in Genesis chapter 3, the devil brings sin to the world. Now the serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Indeed, has God said, you shall not eat from the tree of, from any tree of the garden?" Now, did the serpent actually speak? Did it have that capability prior to this? Or did God, Satan give the snake or the serpent that capability at that point? And we know that later on, God or an angel of God gave a donkey the ability to speak that had not had it. And we don't have any indication there either whether Balaam reacted. I don't know exactly how I would react. I mentioned before, I think, that we don't sometimes see the humor in the Bible. I think God had a sense of humor myself. Seeing the way some people act, you know, he had to have some kind of sense of humor. But just think what it would have been like for you be riding down the road on this donkey, and you'd had the donkey all its life, and just a old dumb donkey, and he turns around and starts talking to you. I would be a little bit taken aback, I think. It doesn't say that Balaam was. Well, here it doesn't say that Eve was dismayed or startled or anything. Whether that was the case, again, it's not necessarily important that we know that. It really doesn't matter if the snake could talk before this or not. True. Whether he looked like this or not, I don't know. You can go on the internet and see all kinds of pictures of drawing. I started to include that, but decided not to. Well, then I just decided to include it. John Smith was the Mormon guy. Well, he has a papyrus as part of his writings as well. And, of course, in my opinion, it was all, he did it all. I don't think there's any possibility an angel came down and wrote that out for him and gave it to him and said, go and change the world. He has a picture that is on one of his papyruses that has this snake, then with two legs drawn down from it, which is very cartoonish, to supposedly in some kind of ancient writing. But anyway, apparently, and we know what happened to the snake, and as Libby said, apparently it could walk. Now, whether it was like this or had little legs, had a bunch of legs, we don't really know. But we can see that this could have easily turned into that with just a little bit of modification, and maybe that was the case. We don't know. We are told that the snake was craftier than all other animals. And we do know also that some, I've never known snakes to be, and I've fooled with snakes all my life. I'm not like some folks, like our one of our preachers that I won't name is just hysterical around snakes. But they both may be, I don't know, come to think of it. I hadn't heard Tony say, but I know you mentioned snake, and Mark starts looking for a chair to get up on. But anyway, that I've never known snakes to be particularly smart or affectionate either, for that matter. So there are animals that are smarter than others in our way of thinking. Whether the snake was like that, whether he was actually smarter at that time, and it sort of indicated he may have had reasoning ability of some sort. Many psychologists would tell us that animals can't reason. I don't necessarily accept that, having been raised with animals all my life, and some pretty smart ones in my opinion. But anyway, that well, that's a possibility, but we just don't know is the point, whether this was Satan's influence. If we go back, if it'll go back, yeah, it almost does. That was another picture I was thinking of. But anyway, some other pictures I found had like a head, more like a human-type head and that kind of stuff. And others looking like we picture Satan as looking, with horns and being red and all that kind of stuff, and the forked tongue. Yeah, probably could. Yes. I don't know that either. It may have been, you know, women are typically pictured as more sympathetic, a little bit more accepting, possibly, than some men are. That may be the reason that that Satan chose to approach Eve instead of Adam. I just don't know. All of these questions you're asking are good questions, but we don't have an answer for them. We do know that there was influence by the devil. We know that Eve was approached first and not Adam. We know that the devil was punished by having to crawl on his belly. Now, whether that means he flew before or he had legs, we really don't know. But anyway, he came to Eve and said, have you been given free rein? Can you eat of every tree of the garden? Well, she says in verse 2, from the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but from the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat from it or touch it, or you will die. And the serpent said to the woman, you surely will not die. Now, this is one of the things that makes lies more believable, is a certain amount of truth to them. Got a email today about an email scam that's going around and wanting your addresses, email addresses and passwords, just to verify your connection and all this kind of stuff. And our email company said, that's not us. So don't answer that. And we have gotten them, and they look just like emails from Highway, and you may have gotten them from some other source. Our email said that they're not the only ones that are being bothered by it. It's all of them. So to make it look as much like the real thing makes it easier to believe. Well, same thing is true. Well, that's a type of lie. Well, the same thing is true here. As close to the truth without actually being the truth makes it more believable. And so he said, you won't die. Well, they weren't going to die on the spot. But if they, just think about it a minute, if they had not ever have eaten of that, they would not have died. I think they would still be living. Ever how long ago that was, they would still be living if they had not eaten of that tree. Because they were. And that, we talk about being separated from God and separating from earth and that kind of thing. That's true. That's what death means. And so, in that instance, they were separated. Because we'll notice a little bit later, they had a different relationship with God. And that changed. So the separation began almost immediately. In verse 5, for God knows, this is still the devil talking, for God knows that in the day you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. In that respect, again, that's a lie. But there's enough truth in it that makes it even more believable, and that is that they know good and evil. That's true. But they are not going to be like God, in all respects at least. Verse 6. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eye, and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from the fruit and ate, and she gave it also to her husband with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loin coverings. Or at least close by, right. Now, most of the time, too, if you go and look for pictures of Adam and Eve eating from the fruit of the forbidden tree, it pictures something like an apple or something like that. Well, we don't have any idea what that looked like. I really think there was only one of them. There never were any more. So whether it was fruit that had seed in it that would allow it to reproduce or not, or whether God just decided there was not going to be any more of them. But anyway, it was apparently desirable to eat. Tree is, yeah. Whether it's the same, again, whether that's figurative language or just indicating that we would live forever, or whether the tree actually is going to be there or not, I'm not real sure about that. But then, in verse 8, this is what I had reference to a minute ago when about this relationship that these two had with God. They heard the sound of God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. Now, if they weren't familiar with God moving around in the garden, they wouldn't have known what the noise was. Whether that brings up another question, what form was God in? Were they allowed to see him? Did they actually talk to him face to face? Now, these are all questions that we can bring up, but I don't have answers for them. We do know that at least one man saw part of God, but not his face. Exodus chapter 33, if you want to go over there and read that, Moses, this is a period of time very tumultuous with Israel, the golden calf and idol worship and the Ten Commandments and all this kind of stuff going on. And so Moses was in pretty bad emotional shape at this point in time. And he asked God, he said, give me a sign. Show me your glory is actually the word that Moses used. But he said he just needed to see God. I need to know. Give me the strength that I would get from actually knowing, not by faith, but by sight. And so in Exodus chapter 33 is where that is related, and beginning with verse 20. But God said, "You cannot see my face, for no man can see me and live." Now, whether that meant at that time, whether no one had ever seen God's face, I don't know if Adam and Eve were allowed to. You know, if they had been allowed to actually see God's face, to actually talk to Him like you and I can talk to each other, that just shows how profound that mistake, that sin was. That here they were actually allowed to be in God's physical presence. I don't know if they were allowed to touch Him or not, or even if they could touch Him. Again, we're getting into areas that we don't know. But to me, that's one of the tragedies of this whole thing, is the loss of that ability, that they were not allowed to converse with Him anymore. So apparently they knew what it was like for God to walk through the garden. They knew what it was like to see Him and to talk with Him. But as He told Moses in Exodus 23 and verse 20, that no man can see His face and live. Then the Lord said, "Behold, there is a place. There is a place by me, and you shall stand there on the rock. And it will come about while my glory is passing by, that I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and cover you with my hand, until I have passed by. Then I will take my hand away, and you shall see my back, but my face you shall not be seen." So God allowed Moses to see his back. He relented that much, but not his face. And of course, that's I don't know if you recognize it or not, but that's about a verse of "Hide me in the cleft of the rock" that we sing every once in a while. That's where that comes from. No, he never described it. We know that when he came down off of the mountain, what did he look like? Remember? Yeah, he was so bright he had to put a veil over his face to keep from blinding the folks. So, That very, very well may have been true. That's a good story we'll get to a little bit later. Enoch was the first preacher, incidentally. Ma'am? Yeah, he was. And then in verse 9, then God called to the man and said to him, "Where are you?" And of course, he didn't have to do that. He knew where they were. He was just going to see what he said. In verse 10, he said, this is Adam, "I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself." And then God's, he just like we have all done at one time or another with our kids, I'm sure. Catch them in a lie. And who told you that? How'd you find that out? And so that's, he got caught. So somebody told him he was naked, and he didn't know that before. So let's put a mark right there, verse 11 and 12, and we'll start there next time.